1-1.
Spector's Al Paul is in the biggest news from the primaries. Hey, hey, everybody. Hope you're warm and safe wherever you hail from, and you're listening to America Tonight. This is Kate Delaney. Coming up, you're going to hear some interesting things in our last hour, including a conversation with Rand Paul, who now is the GOP choice to run for Senate in the great state of Kentucky in November when people go to levy their votes. Is it going to be for Rand Paul? This is the first time he has been in a position where he was elected to represent the Republicans, but how will he do? I think he'll win. I think he has a good chance. And Arlen Specter is gone. Joe Sestak instead takes his spot. So after 30 years in the Senate, Specter will leave and ride off into the sunset in November. How about that? I don't think a couple of years ago anybody would have thought it, but based on what's happened in the past year plus, year and a half or so, I don't think it's too much of a shocker if you've been keeping score on the frustrations that have that rippling effect ultimately on the careers of politicians across the country. The people are speaking. They're frustrated by what they're seeing, whether it's illegal immigration, the problems that with the health care reform originally coming about a year ago and how it was presented and all the holes in the system, and now the fact that it's kicked into law and it's probably going to cost three times more than originally thought, but we're not there yet. And then a slew of other things that have or have not been dealt with in Washington. It's the land of inactivity until we're poked and prodded, and oof, we have no choice. So people have spoken, they do have a choice, and they've gone in an interesting direction, I think, in these primaries. And they're not the only ones, but they're probably the biggest ones. In the meantime, a couple of other quick things right here at the top, including this one, 18 dead in Afghanistan in a suicide attack, and five Americans are among those that were killed. And you hate to see those pictures. Somebody sent me a few pictures of it on an iPhone, and I'm sure they're all over the web by now anyway. But at least at this point, they're saying also a Canadian was killed, and it was a terrible strike, of course, claimed by the Taliban, that they're saying this is ours, this is our win. And 12 civilians were killed, 48 injured total. The British Foreign Office says really the civilian death toll is closer to 19. Regardless, it's bad. It was an explosion, and you could see the field was littered with charred parts and thrown all over the place from the blast. Unfortunately, this is a familiar sight in Afghanistan, especially when we're talking about Kabul. So once again, a deadly attack, and it's an attack of reckless, deplorable violence. And it's a strike that shows that the Taliban does not have the best interests of the Afghanistan people at heart. Perhaps this will open a few eyes. The soldiers now are like diplomats, and these are things that they can use as, look what's happening, look what the Taliban is doing here. Closer to our own shores, a lot of concern still over the oil spill, BP trying to cap it, trying to cut the leak completely off after those horrifying pictures came out, the video, and it was just gushing out of that well head, you know, out of the well that's not closed off, and it started to make people wonder, well, how many barrels is that leaking every day? I think it's a little bit more than that. So the concern has spread to people who don't want to see, politicians who don't want to see more of the drilling going on offshore, including Senator Robert Menendez from New Jersey.
Do you stand up with the taxpayers or with multi-billion dollar oil companies? Do you stand up with the commercial fishermen or multi-billion dollar oil companies? Do you stand up with the shrimp fishermen in Louisiana or multi-billion dollar oil companies? The fundamental flaw in their argument is that if you happen to be smaller, then you should have less liability, even though you could create the same damage.
Yeah, so the problem he's referring to is they're talking about the liability issue and the fact that the liability for BP is $75 million, meaning they pay for the environmental cleanups and all that stuff. But then after there, if you've got a fisherman who have lost livelihoods and other people who rely on tourism or whatever, it can't go beyond their liability would only be $75 million. And what Menendez is saying, now you also have, with all these oil leases and all of these rigs, you're talking about smaller companies where it would be crippling to them if you were to take off the cap or to make the number that much higher. For somebody like BP, they bleed money for breakfast. They could pay that. But a smaller company, they'd be out of business. How about Ken Salazar in the Interior Department? Boy, it's been a shakeup there lately, hasn't it? The guy in charge of drilling, inspecting, suddenly decides, oh, I'm going to retire. This is a good time to head for the hills and bales. And Salazar talks now at this point about the oil spill.
That responsibility, I will say, starts first with the Department of Interior and the Minerals Management Service. We need to clean up that house. We've instituted new ethics codes for the department. We have the Inspector General involved with us in making sure that the employees of MMS are abiding to the highest ethical standards that are possible.
Yeah, ethical standards. Just get the thing cleaned up. Ethics, schmectics, do you think they have any? I mean, this is the guy, I'll say it again in case you missed it. Here's the guy that was whitewater rafting. Oh, a little oil spill. It's okay, no problem. I'm going to go whitewater rafting. It is a business deal after all. And then they had to take him out of the Grand Canyon. They had to helicopter him out. Oh, my, oh, my. All right, so we move from that to tell you what's coming up around the bend. The conversation with Rand Paul. Also, we're going to talk to Denny Kelly. It's an interesting thing. You see this volcano erupting in Iceland. He can recall, you know, it's been 30 years since Mount St. Helens. When Mount St. Helens shook to the core, and the conversation about ash there and what it turned to for one plane that was in front of a plane that he was in, plane that he was flying, and ultimately the decision not to go through the plume. And so he can you can understand why now so many of the planes are grounded in Ireland or England or wherever because of the danger to those who would actually try to go through the plume, thinking it was okay. Do you believe it's been 30 years since that since Mount St. Helens erupted? And I still remember looking at the pictures now that I think of it and the damage actually that Mount St. Helens caused. But the ash cloud, nothing like what is happening from the Iceland volcano, which the last time it erupted, erupted for 2 years straight. So can you imagine if that continues to erupt day after day, week after week? Ooh, that's going to be rough, I think, for the airline industry. Anyway, we're going to talk about that and plus the Airbuses that have crashed. What's the scoop on that? Remember, they are computerized. Denny Kelly coming up next here on America Tonight.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for the enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Fact. 4 million people in the U.S. have hepatitis C due to liver damage. Fact. Cirrhosis of the liver is the eighth leading cause of death among Americans. Fact. Alcohol, many prescription drugs, food additives, pesticides, and environmental toxins damage the liver. Fact. 1 in 10 Americans is or has been affected by liver or gallbladder disease. Fact. Anything that keeps the liver from doing its job can put your life in danger. Protect your liver by visiting researchedherbs.com and learning more about the world's number one selling all-natural liver support formula, Live52. It is the only herbal liver supplement that is backed by over 190 published clinical trials and endorsed by a quarter of a million healthcare professionals in 76 countries worldwide. Don't wait to protect your liver. Visit us at researchedherbs.com or call 1-800-973-1486. That's 1-800-973-1486 or go to researchedherbs.com. All the goodness with none of the side effects.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Ireland or England. I actually had two friends, of all things. One went to Spain, but one was headed to Ireland, too, and very concerned about this erupting volcano in Iceland and all of the ash cloud. And what was, you know, what would it entail? Would it be a day when they were flying? Would it be backed up like it was in April when so many planes were downed and were canceled all over Europe, depending on the day, and then trying to get people back in the air? That was a nightmare for the airlines. But it was very dangerous for the passengers, and I think a lot of them don't understand what the ash cloud actually could do to a plane. So who better to have on ATN than my pal Denny Kelly, airline investigator, former airline pilot, and daredevil. No, he's not a daredevil. Hey, Denny, how are you?
How are you, Kate?
You're not a daredevil. You're not going to Vegas and you're doing, you know, where the people, they jump off the, what's that tall building there, that crazy building that people, they don't parachute off. You know what it's called, where they bungee jump. They bungee jump off.
Oh, bungee jump, yeah. Yeah.
That's not for me.
No, I don't do anything like that. I've always been a coward. I'm proud of it. So.
Well, I come from the same ranks, absolutely. Hey, before we jump into the Iceland thing, actually, you had something happen that we talked about off the air. Mount St. Helens was erupting. And so, you know, sort of with everything else that's going on, that's not making the kind of news it would normally make. But there's an ash cloud there. What happened when you were in the Great Northwest and that was going on?
Well, we took off out of Seattle, and we were about 20 minutes behind another airline that was going basically the same place we were. And we both, you know, it was a clear day, and we could see this huge cloud from Mount St. Helens. south of us, and it was kind of, it was interesting. And so the guy in front of us called the center and said, hey, we'd like to deviate south course, go down there and take a look at all this. So they gave him permission, and he went down there, and we were about 20 minutes behind him, and we were going to do the same thing, and all of a sudden he calls the center and says, you know, we declared an emergency. So we got to get out of here. We went through some of that cloud, and he said, our windshield is opaque, and both of our engines are overheating, and we've got to make, you know, we got to land. We got to get this thing on the ground right now. So, of course, we didn't go down there. But after that, we went back on course and went to Dallas. But the thing is, he landed. They had to change both engines, change out the windshield, and it was real serious. And there were several incidents over the next few months where airplanes got a little close, and they actually did damage. People don't realize those clouds are full of microscopic sand, for a better, lack of a better term, and they can do a lot of damage to an airplane.
Yeah, no kidding. Is it, somebody described it to me like it was, would this be accurate, Denny? It would like feel like glass shards sort of coming toward the plane.
Well, they basically, that's what sand is glass, and it's silicone. And now, it's my understanding, I was in the safety committee at that time, and we did a little bit of research in this. And it's basically these volcanoes, when they erupt, there can be some chemical difference in the plume or the cloud that comes out of the volcano. And so it varies a little bit as to what's actually the chemical makeup or what's actually in the cloud. But a lot of it is very abrasive, and it's dangerous. And if it gets into the engine and it's the wrong type, it can damage or make an engine shut down. So it's nothing to mess with. And they're smart in what they're doing in Europe now by taking precautions to keep people away from those things.
Yeah, and I think the more the word gets out and people realize that, I mean, hey, you get stuck, you get stuck. I'd rather be stuck than, frankly, in a situation where we don't know if we're going to make it or not because we were just so desperate to hurry up and get back home and get in the air. I think this gets lost on people. And, hey, I'm impatient. Look, I know. But I think people, Denny, sometimes don't realize, and they think the airlines are making it up, and they don't realize that there are things that happen, and they're in a rush to get somewhere. And it could be at the detriment of themselves if you keep pressuring the airlines on this timing thing, don't you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would be the first to say that sometimes the airlines do make things up so that, you know, they can cancel a flight and save a little money. But there are times like this when it makes sense and they're smart in not letting airplanes fly through this stuff. And I don't know what they're going to do if this thing continues to erupt and causes all kinds of disturbances with this volcanic ash, and depending on where it goes, of course, with the jet stream. But this could be a problem for several months. I mean, it's something that may not end in the next few weeks. It could go on for quite a while.
Yeah, boy, no kidding. We saw another Airbus go down, and this time it was coming in from Johannesburg. This happened last week, and everybody was killed except for one child. One child survived it, and it's just like what happened the last time, last June. We were talking about the same thing. A child also survived when a plane went down. This was also an Airbus. So kind of two questions. One, what is it with kids? Is it the height? Is it just they survived somehow because of the space they were in? And the other thing is, what's going on with the Airbus?
Well, it's a fluke that thank heavens that it happened, but it's a fluke that the child or any child like that survives. Who knows the real reason? It could be that the child's was small enough that he was, you know, protected by the seat in front of him and the seat he was in. It's hard to say. I mean, it's almost impossible to say. I mean, there was an example. I mean, there was an example of a in Europe or Asia, a flight attendant that had blown out of an airplane that exploded, and it was 30-some thousand feet in the air, and she survived. And she survived because it just so happened she hit a certain thing coming down. She hit trees, and they were full of snow, and they broke her fall, and, you know, she survived. It's a fluke, and it's going to be hard to explain for anybody really to know for sure why the kid, why the child survived. The second part of that is, you know, it's been six A300 crashes in the last, I don't know how many years. You know, I've been saying this, and people have been saying this for a long time, that these Airbus airplanes that are what we call all electric, that is, they're all computer driven, there are some problems occasionally. And, I don't know if they're, I don't know if they're getting any closer to solving them or not, but these things, you know, it, these things are driven by computers, and you know, you know yourself, you get on your laptop or your desktop, either one, you know, all of a sudden you get a, sign that says something's, you know, something's wrong, you gotta reboot. Well, that's fine on your desktop computer, but if you're in an airplane going 500 miles an hour, it's not too good. So it's hard to say. There's so much political pressure and so much money behind Airbus that it's hard to get anything done, but there's definitely a problem. Definitely.
Still looking for another TSA director. Obama's turned into somebody else. What would you look for in somebody to lead that agency? What do you think would be, who would be best? Not necessarily the name of somebody. What qualities do you think would be best?
Well, you need somebody, in that job that really understands airlines and airline security and what the threats are. And you need somebody in that job that is not a political animal. As it stands now, the people that are appointed to the top positions are all political animals, and they all dance to whatever the president wants them to dance to, and that's just not going to work. You're going to have somebody, if you're going to do a good job, you're going to have somebody in there that understands, bottom line, what needs to be done. And I can tell you that one of the things that has to be done if you're going to do a good job is to profile passengers like they do in Europe, and they've been doing in Europe and Asia for a long time. But they won't do it because of the political ramifications. And it, I'm telling you that until they do that, it's not going to be any safer than it was on September the 10th, 2001.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same. Denny, always nice to speak with you here on America Tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Denny Kelly's right. He has got all this experience with investigating crashes and obviously flying planes as well. And he brings up an interesting point. That's why I specifically asked him about the Airbus. And I loved his analogy. We think when these Airbuses go down, I do, I always shudder because I think, how many Airbuses have I been on? And they're electric. That's what they run on. It's computerized, basically, is what I meant to say. So your computer goes down and... He's right, you reboot it, but what do you do when you're on a plane? Coming up on the flip side, the price of lumber, how it's killing many Americans in the home building business. Stay with us.
The problem.
How do I cook food without power?
How do I light my home with no electricity?
How do I get emergency radio broadcasts?
How can I make safe drinking water?
When your power goes out, the solution for cooking, baking, home lighting, listening to the radio, and producing clean water is the Family Emergency Kit from Caro Stove. Caro Stove has been in business for over 12 years with the largest selection of kerosene stoves and family preparedness supplies in the U.S. Now, get the Family Emergency Kit at KEROstove.com for only $4.29 plus shipping, a savings of nearly $200. It's perfect for off-the-grid living. Call 888-395-1164 today. That's 888-395-1164 and ask about weekly specials or check the specials online each week at KEROstove.com. Again, call 888-395-1164 or go to KEROstove.com. Caro Stove, for family emergency solutions.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Utopiasilver.com believes, as the Declaration of Independence states, that our rights come from God, not from government. The only lawful purpose of any government is to protect and secure the rights of the people, and no man or government has the authority to take what has been given to us by God. Among these rights are life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. And America's government has ceased to be the protector of liberty and of the people's God-given rights. But we the people can return America to greatness if we are willing to stand up and reassert our stolen rights. We ask that you join Utopia Silver in changing America's course in history. To save on healthcare and improve your health, call Utopia Silver at 888-213-4338. For a limited time, new customers will receive 50% off all colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338.
Hi, I'm Sarah Atkins, inventor of Better Than Rocks, the one-of-a-kind solution to planter drainage. A few years ago, I searched for a lightweight product to put in the bottom of my containers to help with drainage. I found there was nothing on the market, so I decided to develop something myself. The result is Better Than Rocks. It keeps soil in, lets excess water out, and helps oxygen reach the plant's roots by creating an air pocket in the bottom of the planter. This helps the plant absorb nutrients, which is necessary to grow healthy plants. Better Than Rocks is practically weightless, so your containers will be lighter. And it's made of 100% recycled plastic right here in North America. You can reuse it year after year, so it should never end up in a landfill.
I discovered Better Than Rocks last year, and I was happy to find my plants were much healthier, fuller, and the containers were easy to move around.
Ask for Better Than Rocks at your favorite garden center, or visit
BetterThanRocks.com.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Don't ignore your prostate health. I'm Roger Mason, research chemist and developer of the all-natural supplement Beta Prostate, and I want you to know about a free bottle giveaway. Beta Prostate helps your body support good prostate health. Your prostate affects the quality of your life, including your sleeping habits and even intimacy. Beta Prostate has plant sterol shown to support healthy urine flow and healthy sleeping habits. And Beta Prostate is so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules to get the same plant sterols found in one Beta Prostate. New customers can get a free bottle of Beta Prostate. You only pay a small shipping and handling fee. Make the call today and get your free bottle.
To get your free bottle of Beta Prostate, call 1-800-257-7201. One free bottle per household. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-257-7201. That's 1-800-257-7201.
Southbound cruising with a half pound blue light spinning round. Better put the hammer down, Federal, Tennessee. Ain't nobody stopping the short run. Seed line gotta keep making time. Alabama hot test.
Welcome back to America Tonight, and in our segment called Making News in the Cha-Ching Factor column, it has to be the cost of home building materials. Jeez, could these guys in the home building business have to take it even more on the chin? I just learned the other day from somebody who was actually shopping in Home Depot, and then they went to Lowe's, and then they went to their local lumber yard, that I don't know why I didn't think of this, but the price of lumber is up like 100% wood for wood panels. Wow, that's got a pinch. So who better to go to than our expert home builder, Carrie Clark, joining us right here on ATN. Hey, Carrie, how are you?
Good, Kate. How are you this evening?
So is that true? What's happened? What's going on with wood?
Well, there are a lot of different factors, but lumber prices overall are up about 40% since January.
Woo! 40%. Is it partially because people were, there was sort of a slack in buying lumber, and then some lumber yards perhaps folded and that kind of thing, and so then all of a sudden there was more availability? There's got to be a couple of factors probably at work here.
Yes, there are. That's exactly right. Lumber is a commodity like gold or silver or pork bellies for that matter, and as slow as business was last year, a lot of mills went out of business or shut down production, and that left a very low inventory. And then you combine the national tax credit that's created a spike in new home starts in the first quarter of this year, with the international crises of what happened in Haiti and Chile, and that's where a lot of the lumber went to, and there it just became more kind of a supply and demand thing, and there was just a lack of available materials, and prices went crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. I was looking at an example that a buddy of mine sent me, and he was talking about these rows of 2x4s that they were just, you know, piled high, but that the price of wood, like you said, he said 35 to 40% or so, and the cost of a thousand board feet of framing lumber was $200 a year ago. As of just a couple of days ago, it was up to about $358. Woo, that's got to. And what are you going to do as a builder? You're going to have to tack that on to the cost of the house, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And lumber is one of the biggest, you know, ticket items on a construction project. It equals about 10% of the overall cost of the construction job. So it,
wow,
it creates quite an impact. Now, some of the things that we do as builders to kind of mitigate some of the risk is if we know we're going to start a project, we will continually bid it out up until the start of the project. So, you know, 30 and 40 days out, we're checking lumber prices and checking with our suppliers and adjusting prices along the way. So, you know, but, you know, sometimes you get caught short and you just have to factor that in and you end up losing a little bit. But, you know, again, as a commodity, the price ebbs and flows, and sometimes it works to your advantage if lumber happens to drop, you know, from the time you bid it to when you actually start the job. But it's not usually this severe. This was a major swing. It's usually, you know, much more manageable.
Yeah, and I guess, too, in China and South Korea and India, they were buying up all the cheap lumber that they could get in North America, and they were shipping it overseas, so that would also affect lumber prices, right?
Absolutely. So there was just a real demand on a what would be a shortage of materials, is, you know, anyway. So a lot of people chasing very few goods.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm glad you said that lumber is a commodity. I've been watching this thing on the History Channel that a lot of, I think, the listeners are watching as well, Carrie. It's called America, the Story of Us, and it's fascinating, talking about the migration west and how Wisconsin, for example, back in the day, so many trees, it was just a plethora of riches, and they would cut them down and have to ship them out west because you didn't have them out west. You had the desert in the southwest, and that's where all of the lumber started to go by train. Where's most of the lumber coming from now?
There is still quite a bit of lumber that is grown up, or a bunch of trees, and produced up around Washington State and Canada. But actually, a whole lot of lumber is produced within 100 miles here in Louisiana and East Texas.
Wow, how about that? And so what's your prediction? Like you said, it's a commodity, so there's going to be an ebb and a flow anyway. You think we'll start to see this crazy number start to slide down, hopefully, right?
Well, we actually have. Lumber was down about 10% last Friday, and they predict that it'll be down another 10% by the end of next week. And my lumber supplier tells me that we should be back to March levels by the 1st of June.
Yeah. Last time we checked in with you, you were telling us, it was interesting, you were telling us about how you survive and thrive in this kind of an economy where you've had this business and what you've been able to do, and that you yourself are out in the field. How's it going now?
It's still pretty tough. You know, I think I shared with you, I'm cautiously optimistic because it's certainly, we're seeing some signs that things are improving over what we saw last year. We have not sold a whole lot of homes this year, but we are having some engaging conversations with a lot of folks coming out to our model homes. And so just the mere fact there's people out visiting with us and talking about building new homes is encouraging to us. That kind of tells me that people are kind of slowly coming out of their shell and kind of getting past their fears of whether or not they're going to be losing their job. And I'm just seeing a whole pent-up demand of people that would love to be in new homes that are probably, you know, pretty close to making decisions.
Yeah,
so that's encouraging.
That is encouraging. Carrie Clark, home builder. Always great to talk with Carrie here on the Cha-Ching Factor on ATN. All right, so again, you heard what he was talking about as far as lumber is concerned, and there are other things that have hurt the home building business, namely foreclosures, the sale of existing houses. As he was saying, people are starting to get interested again. That's a good sign. I think if you see more people, because there were so many people that were going for the custom homes, if you see more people doing that, surely that is definitely a sign that things are on track or in a better position than they have been in a long time, whether it's a high-end home builder like Cary is, where it's more $400,000 and up, or even if you're in the neighborhood of $250,000, I guess, and up. Maybe you can even have a custom one built for a little bit less than that. But regardless, across the board, home builders are feeling that, and you can tell with the way the prices of lumber were shooting up that was a huge concern. Economy, a big factor in what's happened in these primaries where Congressman Joe Sestak topped Arlen Specter, a guy who had been around for 30 years in the Senate as a Democrat, as a Republican, and as a Democrat again. So I believe Specter, who was hanging on by his political fingernails, thought when he jumped to the Democrats, this was it. I mean, this is Joe Sestak. He can oust him, right? He's Arlen Specter, and he's been around for a while. Well, it didn't happen. And that's not the only big change that we saw that happened at the primaries. Rand Paul, who's never gone for elected office before, but of course is the son of Congressman Ron Paul from Texas, made a lot of noise. And coming up, we're going to let you hear an interview I did with Rand Paul and some of his philosophies and why he was running and what he thinks should happen, especially when it comes to money. You know, there's this big financial reform vote that's happening on Thursday, the whole idea of the big banks to big to fail, that people were furious over that. So this was a way to ease our pain, but really what is in this financial reform? And he and I talked a lot about the Federal Reserve and the problems with the Federal Reserve. So that's coming up here in a few minutes. It was a big shakeup in Kentucky and Arkansas and in Pennsylvania, especially the Specter thing, as I told you, but also the fact that you've got Rand Paul, who was able to get out there, to shake a lot of hands, talk to a lot of people, to hit at the core of how many people were feeling in his state of Kentucky, frustrated beyond all belief. So the conservative Paul defeats the Secretary of State, Trey Grayson, in this wild Republican primary fight for a seat that was held by retiring Republican Senator Jim Bunning, who is, you know, going away and was going away. And now that created that chasm, that opening. But you had Mitch McConnell endorsing Grayson and talking about Grayson. And McConnell certainly has a lot of teeth when it comes to political manpower in Kentucky and in Washington. But yet Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, emerges from that. He had the backing of some Tea Party groups. He was endorsed by the former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Now he faces the Kentucky Attorney General, Jack Conway, who is pretty much the winner of the Democratic primary. But this is a very big, big win for Paul, and I think it certainly signals the change and the full support that he now will have behind him in this November Senate race. Whew. Stay tuned. Rand Paul coming up next on ATN.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Let's talk tough. Let's talk comfort. Let's talk about down home values. Made in the USA blue jeans, like you wore as a kid. Remember?
There's a place down in Tennessee where they make blue diamond gusset jeans. They show pride in every stitch. Guarantee you love the way they fit. They put a diamond gusset in the crotch. Where you need it most, Blue Diamond Gusset's got it, others don't.
For good old-fashioned comfort, get Diamond Gusset jeans. Every stitch guaranteed. And our Defender motorcycle jean comes Kevlar reinforced. See them at GUSSET.com, that's Gusset.com, or call 888-848-7738. That's 888-848-7738. Diamond Gusset jeans got it, others don't.
Oh, my sinuses! They feel like they'll explode!
Sinus pressure, sinus headaches that keep you up at night. You've struggled for years. You've tried everything to get relief, but your sinus distress just keeps coming back and robbing you of the healthy life you deserve. Sound familiar? Well, you're not alone. Statistics show that 37 million Americans suffer from sinus distress. Fact is, 67 products merely treat the symptoms and don't get to the cause of your sinus problem. Now there's a solution that's safe and doctor-recommended. SinoFresh Homeopathic Antiseptic Nasal Spray. It's the only patent-protected nasal product that antiseptically eliminates the known causes of your sinusitis. No alcohol, no rebound congestion, no drug interactions, and easy to use. Don't go another day just treating symptoms. Take control of your sinus health now and get SinoFresh Homeopathic Antiseptic Nasal Spray and get the relief you deserve. Go to buysinofresh.com. That's B-U-Y, sinofresh.com. Or call 888-906-3636. Breathe easy. Breathe free. Get SinoFresh today. It works.
It's no jive talking. Our next guest is making some serious noise in the race for the U.S. Senate 2010. Dr. Rand Paul no longer can be called the underdog in that race to grab the Republican nod after a huge third quarter in fundraising, well over $1 million. Rand, first, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight. And, boy, how does it feel to shed that label and to have all that support?
Oh, that's great, Kate. The only thing is I kind of like being the underdog, so I'm not sure if we're ready to be the front runner. It's more fun being the underdog.
I don't blame you there, not at all. Healthcare, let's dive right into this. Healthcare the other day, Senate Finance Committee releases a version of War and Peace, because I actually measured it, and War and Peace is a few pages less. So over 1,500 pages comes out of the Senate Finance Committee. Now, Rand, tell me this. If you're a senator representing Kentucky, really honestly, can you read that cover to cover? By my account, I think you would have to do nothing else, pay no attention to your family, and it would take you 2 months. What is going on with these bills? Who is reading these? Is this something that you would change if you're in the Senate?
Absolutely. And the thing is not only is it 1,500 pages, but you have to have the Federal Register nearby because they'll say they're deleting Section 42,000B, and you've got to look that up in the Federal Register. So it's hard to read these bills from cover to cover without referring to the parts of the Federal Register that they're changing. So they're almost impossible to read. At least this one's being put out with some time to try to look at it. Many of the bills, though, like the bank bailout bill, was 1,100 pages. There were 12 hours to read it, an impossibility. So I think we have to reform this. I proposed that for every page or for every 20 pages of a bill, we have one day of waiting. So if you have a 1,000-page bill, you've got to wait 50 days in order to have time to read it before you vote on it. So I think a waiting period or a reading period for congressmen would be a good idea.
Yeah, boy, I concur with you on that one. And speaking of health care, if you're as part of the Senate and you've got a vote in this, what would you like to see happen to health care? And you're a doctor. What do you think should happen with health care in the United States?
Well, I think the first question we have to ask is, are the problems that we have now because of too much government or too little government? Most of the Democrats in Washington and quite a few Republicans think that we don't have enough government involvement yet and that the problems are because of capitalism. My point is completely the opposite. I think the problems in health care are that we don't have enough capitalism. In order to have capitalism work, you have to have private ownership, which we have, but we don't have mobility of prices. Price competition is necessary for capitalism to work for the consumer, and the reason health care is so expensive is that prices don't go up and down on a daily basis. The prices, 55% of what I do is already government, and the prices are fixed by government. So if you go to any doctor and get eye surgery in the whole country and you're on Medicare, the price is the same. There is no price competition. But it's the same if you have private insurance, Blue Cross, Humana. If you go to a doctor in your town, they all charge the same rate. There is no price mobility. There is no price competition. That's what you need in healthcare is price competition.
Yeah,
and
so
we don't have it.
It's the free market that would change things, right?
Exactly. The free market works in every other facet of the economy. Why don't we try to harness the engine of the free market, capitalism, and competition and put that in healthcare? Instead, you've got these people who believe so much in government that they want to do, you know, they think the head of FEMA could run healthcare. The head of FEMA couldn't even distribute water at the Superdome after Katrina, so I hardly think they're going to be capable of running the healthcare system.
Yeah, boy, no kidding. Hey, let's jump to one of my favorites. Boy, all the callers on America Tonight, besides healthcare, they get so upset when we talk about financial issues in the United States, and especially the debt. They're concerned about their kids. They're concerned about where we're going, spending, spending, spending. You know, I can't even keep track anymore. They broke that clock in New York that tallied the national debt, but we know it's well over $11 trillion. When we look at our debt, you're there, let's say you're in, you got the power to try to move and swing and change things. What would you do? What would your fight be in this department?
I think the first thing you need to do is elect people who will absolutely say no. I've told people, and my pledge is, I will not vote for any budget that's not balanced. That's where you have to start. If the Republicans introduce it or the Democrats, I have pledged to vote no. I've also pledged that to every appropriations bill, I will amend the bill to reduce it by whatever it takes to balance the budget. So if we're 20% over budget, every appropriations bill, I'm going to have an amendment saying reduce it by 20% so we can balance the budget. Now, that doesn't mean that those things will pass initially, but that's the first step, is electing people who will promise and will follow through with those promises. And then if you get one of them and they're vocal enough, maybe we'll get more elected and more elected, and maybe eventually the American people will rise up and say enough's enough. And I think that's part of what this Tea Party movement is America saying enough is enough, let's take our country back. I think people are tired of the career politicians. I think they want term limits. I will propose and introduce term limits as the first thing I do when I'm elected.
Oh, term limits. You're not going to be that popular then, I think.
Maybe not so much in Washington, but in the countryside, across the United States, 70 to 80% of people want term limits, and yet the guys up there like their jobs too much to vote for it.
I had a great question the other day on the show. Somebody asked me, hey, Kate, what really is the Federal Reserve System? I know you have thoughts on this going along with the whole idea of what are we going to do financially. Would you be part of that movement to get rid of all the secrecy that kind of surrounds the Federal Reserve? It doesn't kind of, it does.
Absolutely. I think the first step is to audit the Fed. My father has an overwhelmingly popular bill, has over 300 co-sponsors, amazing, and yet still hasn't gotten an independent vote yet. They have 30 co-sponsors in the Senate. A lot of people want transparency to the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve bought $2 trillion worth of debt last year, and nobody knows what they purchased. There are people that say 40% of the debt that they purchased was either bad home loans or bad car loans. It used to be bad enough that our dollar was backed only by the full faith and credit of the government buying treasury bills, but at least they only bought U.S. debt. Now they're buying all kinds of foreign debt. They're buying used car loans. They're buying debt that none of us would purchase. So it really makes the soundness of the dollar come into question. And I think a lot of foreigners realize this now. The Chinese are buying less dollars, and they're buying more gold. So I think we stand at a precipice, and we need to be wary of what could happen if we don't start doing something correctly in Washington.
Yeah, another thing that's big for this audience, and I think a lot of people who listen to talk radio in general, because it's, you know, it's an open forum, certainly, is cap and trade. And the discussion of cap and trade, of course, has now been pushed off because there's so many other things that are taking precedent right now. But as far as energy is concerned, where do you stand on that?
Well, cap and trade would be a disaster for all states, but in particular in our state, we produce a lot of coal, and I would say over half or 75% of the jobs in eastern Kentucky are dependent on coal. And not only is cap and trade a disaster, already the federal government is limiting the permits. Obama is so against coal that he's not giving them any permits, and he can do that without congressional authority. He just tells the EPA, give no more permits for coal mining. And that's what's happening out there, and they're beginning to suffer already in eastern Kentucky. But cap and trade would be a disaster even if you don't produce coal. If you're in a state that doesn't produce coal, there are estimates that your family taxes will go up between $500 a year, and actually some estimates are as high as a couple thousand dollars a year taxes on your electricity.
Wow. You mentioned your father, of course, Congressman Ron Paul. When you told him that you were going for this and for the Senate race in Kentucky, what words of wisdom did he impart to you, if any? Run! Don't do it!
Yeah, he said, you know, think about it. Be careful. You know, you could get elected. So I think he's honest about it. He thinks that our country needs new people, needs some people up there that will continue the fight. But he's also honest about the fact that it takes a lot of work, a lot of time away from your family, and that you get a personal onslaught from everybody attacking you for various reasons. And it's not always pleasant. But I think he understands that our country, he understands probably more so than anyone, that our country really is in a dangerous predicament, and we have to do something. And it's to the point for me, I can't idly sit by and just watch, you know, things go to hell in a handbasket without trying to stop what's going on.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but most exciting thing, or not maybe most exciting thing, but the I think the best moment maybe that you've had campaigning, the most surprising thing that's happened along the way as you meet a lot of the folks in Kentucky.
Well, just amazing things. One neat thing, last week I went out and my 10-year-old son got to stand up and do my introductions for me.
Mm.
He was very brave. He stood up in front of 100 people and introduced me, and so that was very exciting. But probably the number one thing I've seen on the campaign trail is I've yet to meet a single Republican primary voter who would have voted for the bank bailout.
Wow, that is interesting, isn't it? I love the story, by the way, about your son. Maybe he's a future politician, especially if he kept his composure. That's great. Rand, good luck to you in your race for U.S. Senate 2010. Thanks so much for spending time with us here on America Tonight.
Thank you.